Welcome to Preaching and Preachers, a weekly podcast devoted to those who preach and to the task of preaching itself. I'm your host, Jason Allen, president of Midwestern Baptist Theological Seminary. Today, I want to welcome Dean and Sarah to the podcast. Dean is the founding and lead pastor of City Church in Tallahassee, Florida, where he leads in vision and preaching. Dean is also an advisory member of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission's Leadership Council with the SBC. He's also a member of Baptist 21. Dean, welcome to Preaching and Preachers.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah, good to have you in the studio today. And man, I've been looking forward to this conversation for some time. And we're going to be talking today about church planting in a college town.
Great.
Something you are eminently equipped to talk about because that's what you've been doing the past 10 years. And I really look forward to hearing the story. And I know the story, but getting to talk through it with you and so our friends, our listeners can hear the story for themselves. And then just unpacking that a little bit as to what God has shown you, what you've learned, and words of application for those listening. So with us today listening, Dean, are many people like yourself, guys, younger guys, some older guys as well, but pastoring a church, preparing to pastor churches, love preaching, love to talk about preaching. And so all of this is germane for the topic, church planting in a college town. So look, I know your story, but I don't want to assume too much. Probably many, if not most of those listening today, don't know the story. So tell us just the broad contours of what's happened at City Church, how God brought you to plant there in Tallahassee, your hometown now, a little over 10 years ago, and what's taken place.
Well, growing up in Tallahassee, even at a young age in high school, I saw a tremendous need for gospel-centered churches. I didn't know to call it that then, but that idea that also had a very modern approach that existed to preach the truth of the scriptures in a 21st century context. And everything kind of lined up for that to happen in my life, you know, by the Lord's grace. We also saw a tremendous need on campus. I believe that the college campus is the largest mission field in the United States. So we always had this desire as we started talking about church planting of a church that wasn't going to be exclusively for college students, but unapologetically wanted to reach the campus. And I was young when we started the church. I was only 26, so it's hard to find families or maybe adults that would give any credibility at the time to a young church planting pastor that just had a vision.
So and let me interrupt you. You're 26 years old. This was 2006?
2007.
2007. You're 26 years old. This is really before, barely before, but before church planting became more vogue as far as with real focused attention and folks kind of, you know, being willing to throw a lot of resources at a church plant. As you say, PKE, pre-Cavanizel days.
Yes, we planted the PKE era, as
yeah,
we call it.
And so when you're 26, 27 years old, seeking to envision this and get it off the ground, talk about the draw to plant in your hometown. What really brought you to a desire, a willingness to launch out and plant this church?
Really my own story, that I had grown up going to mainline Protestant-type church my entire life and had never heard the gospel. And there's some great gospel-preaching churches in our city, be not mistaken, but mainline Protestantism kind of rules the day. A lot of tradition, family history through generations in a southern town like Tallahassee, where we're only about 10 miles from the Georgia border. So all that southern church heritage, which can be a wonderful thing if they're faithfully preaching the scriptures, but it can be a real detriment if church is more about family and heritage and culture rather than it is about Christ. And that was my own story, where I grew up going to church every Sunday morning unless we were sick or out of town. I never had anyone tell me that I needed to trust in Christ and believe the gospel until I came to Christ through a parachurch ministry. So early on, after I came to Christ, I wanted my friends to know the same story and to know that they had to trust in Christ for the forgiveness of their sins. I mean, just the most elementary, basic gospel presentation message was missing. So I wanted to start a church to reach my friends, strangely enough, which really was the motivation at the very beginning. And then while reaching my friends, also saw the great needs on campus at Florida State for college students to hear the gospel as well.
Yeah, so, and of course, we're going to take the conversation towards the college ministry. But before we get there, talk about that early season of planning. I've heard enough of your story to know you started with about 20 people in your parents' living room. And just kind of, again, walk us through the broad contours of how that all developed.
Yeah, I had some friends sit me down, and they said, you've been talking about planting a church since you were in high school. I didn't know what that meant exactly. If you'd asked me when I was a senior at Leon High School what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would have said, start a church in my hometown. And they sat me down and said, why not now? And I said, well, I can give about 100 reasons why not now. And we just started talking and praying through it. And I didn't know what that meant. Again, this is before, I'm not trying to be, you know, discouraging towards anyone in the past, but North American Mission Board wasn't really planting churches at the time. And so I had no help. I didn't know where to go. So I called a mentor of mine. I said, what do I do? And he had me come up and hang out with him for a day. And we kind of walked through it, prayed through it. He directed me to the state convention. Got a little bit of state convention funding at the time and just got going. We started meeting in a living room, started praying together, casting vision, teaching the scriptures, and then decided we wanted to launch a service, Well, we didn't have any money, so we couldn't afford to rent anywhere. So we needed to depend on maybe a local church let us use their building. Well, the one problem is all local churches use their buildings on Sunday morning.
Right.
So I drove around town, made a list of churches that I passed. I then went home and looked them all up. The ones that had websites, I'd go to their website, and I asked one question when I would call them or look at their website. Do you have Sunday night activities? And the one church that did not, we asked if we could use their building on Sunday nights, and the church started.
And so that church granted access to their building on Sunday nights. You're there. And talk about then the progression from being there on that Sunday night and what the Lord began to do numerically and what you saw taking place in the lives of people.
Well, that church we were at, we're very grateful for them, but the facilities were not great at all. And I remember the first Sunday walking in, had maybe 50 people there that had progressed from the living room. 8-foot ceilings, concrete block walls. We had a full band in there. It sounded terrible. I really looked at my wife and I said, what have I done? Like, what have I done to my family? what are we doing? And I was actually discouraged at first, going, this is never going to work. And then people just kept bringing friends, and they kept bringing friends. So we knew, and this is for church planners out there, this kind of stuff, it's not guaranteed to happen, but just be encouraged that there's lots of stories like this out there of God just intervening and showing up. Sat down for lunch with a family friend, and he said, so have you started the church yet? And I said, we have. We're meeting at a church down the street on Sunday nights. I don't even feel good about that because I don't think it's the prime time to reach people. And he said, why don't you move somewhere else? I said, we can't. We don't have any money. He said, well, how much money do you need? I said, well, it costs $1,000 a week to rent out the high school in town for us to do anything we want to do. And we just can't do that. And I don't know where else we would go. We can't take out a lease at a storefront. He said, what if I paid for it? And he wrote a check for the first year at that high school for us to go meet. And we started at the high school the next Sunday, and really the rest is history. And that's how it took off. We got out of that little building into the high school, and we went all in at Florida State at first because I knew being young that was going to be the best option for us in terms of reaching people. And then what really changed the game for us is when those college students stayed in Tallahassee after they graduated. And a major reason why was because of the church. So we were 150 people maybe at that time, and we started kind of casting that vision. Hey, what would it look like for you to raise your family in Tallahassee? Instead of going to get a job in Atlanta or Orlando, what if you stayed here? And we started seeing that happen and started having roots about the children's ministry. And it all started happening.
So, okay, the college ministry. You're near Florida State, one of the great universities in the South. Great football program, great lot of things. And you have a heart to reach college students. You're aware enough to know you're a young guy in your mid-late 20s, and so, you know, perhaps an ability to connect with them and a natural age similarity. And so talk about how instrumental that college campus was, that university campus was, to the growth and to the momentum developing at City Church.
Yeah, what really changed the game for us was we had a group of college students who came in and decided they're going to be local church people before they were anything else, before they would be
seen. Okay, that's a big sentence, though.
It was huge.
Yeah, and unpack that sentence for us. Why was that important?
And because we needed people to lock in with the church, and it's very common for college students who already are believers, and it takes believers to reach unbelievers. You can't start a church with unbelievers.
Right.
You got to start a church with believers. So we needed that core group of 30 college Christian students. But many of them, they don't get involved in local churches because they're busy giving all their time to crew, InterVarsity, RUF, BCM, FCA. We love all those organizations, but they're not the church.
Right.
So we had a group. They didn't thumb their nose at campus ministries. They just said, we're going to invest our time. I don't know if they were raised that way or whatever it was, but they decided they're going to be local church people. And they really gave their lives in those early days. I brought a girl who's now, you know, almost 30 years old through our building last week. She was visiting in town. She's one of our original college students. And she cried the whole way through because she never could imagine when she walked in the door as a 19-year-old freshman in 2007, you know, what it would have been like today. So that group really, I'm indebted to life for that group because they are the ones that really started the church.
So they believed in you, the vision for the church. They saw what God was doing. They dedicated their lives not to just kind of floating around from college ministry, but actually rooting themselves in a local congregation. And God began to work through that.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that also happened was they were trusted us as a place where they could bring their friends. These were college students who, because they weren't involved in campus ministries, not that you have to be one or the other, they were fully involved in campus life. They were in sororities. They were in fraternities. They were, you know, your normal, everyday, regular college student. They just happened to first be committed to Christ. So they were very careful on whether they were going to bring friends. And so we really valued early on what we called the double promise, which means no disclaimer on the way to church where you have to say, hey, just so you know, he's going to make a joke about whatever, or just so you know, there's this lady who sings and she's terrible, but she's really sweet. You know, no disclaimer on the way there and no apology on the way home. We have to say, I'm so sorry. They've never done that before. They've never made fun of that before. They've never made someone stand up and say their name before. So we want our college students to have full confidence knowing they could bring their friends without any hesitation. And that's what happened.
And that's big. That's important. Huge. That's huge.
Because people come to church in the arm of a trusted friend. People don't care that you have a great band. They're lost. Why would they care? They don't care that the pastor's young, that he wears jeans. All this stuff's so overrated. They come to church because a friend invites them. So we need to reach our own people to love their own church enough to bring their friends. Because loving the gospel enough is enough to tell the story of Christ to your friends, but not enough to invite your friends to church if you're going to a church you secretly wish you didn't have to go to yourself. So I think that's critical, especially for college students.
That's huge. So talk about the growth of the college students in your church. By that I mean what you saw God doing in their lives those early years. Obviously, they believed in the church. You did what you just mentioned. They're not going to have to explain away or apologize for the church they're bringing their friends to. They believe in it so much they begin to make vocational decisions around being rooted in the local church, not moving to another city, seeking to raise their kids there. Talk about that growth pattern.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest areas of growth we saw was a confidence in the scriptures, because they're getting hit every way imaginable, you know, on a secular campus, mocked all the way they explained away, you know, things of the scriptures. So as they grew in that confidence, then they actually saw friends of theirs come to church, get it, come to Christ, get baptized. That's when we saw that really begin to happen, and where by the time they were seniors, these are college students who are grounded in the scriptures. These are college students who love the local church, who are really the backbone of our children's ministry and are our best volunteers, even start to give financially, even though they're working part-time at Chick-fil-A, are giving because they believe in all this that's happening. So where the real growth happened, I think, is when it began to really click for them. More than, hey, this is a cool thing to be a part of and bring my friend to, it was, wow, I really do have confidence in the scriptures, in a Christian worldview. I believe in the local church. Our kind of church mantra is for the gospel, for the city. I want to be for the gospel and for the city. So when that clicks, it's on.
And as you've already mentioned, you have all these campus ministries. Not that you're competing with them in some consumeristic way, but you are competing with them in a sense of you're wanting to offer and to be a more compelling opportunity. And that's rooted first and foremost in the theological commitment that Christ is building the church. Christ is building his church. He's not promised to build his parachurch ministry. For that matter, he's not promised to build his seminary. He's promised to build his church. And the extent to which he is engaged in these other parachurch or auxiliary type ministries really, I think, goes back to how well those auxiliary ministries are committed to the local church. So you're there, and you don't want to speak in a condemning way or, you know, be kind of the village jerk who's criticizing these other ministries, but you are wanting to hold up a very compelling vision of what the local church is and why it's primary. And why actually they ought to prioritize being in a congregation on a Sunday as opposed to merely settling for, you know, a Thursday night Bible study. That would be great if that's supplemental. Would be fine if that's in addition to. But them not choosing that over their Sunday gathering with God's people. Talk about how you made that compelling case.
Yeah, well, one, I don't want our college students or any of our church members to be at Christian activities 5 nights a week. We want them to be with their neighbors. We want them to be in their communities. We want them to be coaching t-ball at supper clubs, just become a thing. We want them to be at Florida State basketball games. We want our people to be out right, and be a part of Tallahassee. So there is a competition sense, not in a demeaning way, but it's kind of hard to weird to say that. But the way many, not all, but many campus ministries are set up, you have to choose. Because a campus ministry might have you doing 4 things a week, where you have a Bible study on Monday, a Bible study for leaders, a Bible study on Tuesday, the large group gathering on Thursday. I mean, before you know it, that's your entire life.
Right.
So we weren't afraid to say that out loud, and that gets a little unpopular because I think in the sake of unity, we're just afraid sometimes to speak truth because we think that it's better to be quiet and stay this kind of faux unified than it is to go, no, the local church is God's plan A. We are for you as campus ministries, but you're not the church. I would love for you to be a part of it. And to not be afraid to form relationships with campus ministers and challenge them on those things. A lot of them never truly have been challenged on it before. And some have a bad theology where they might say, well, the church is anywhere where believers are. It's like, well, there's a little bit of truth to that, but the church is more than the local church gathered, but it's definitely not less, mm-hmm. you know, and so make sure that's understood. So we don't talk a lot about campus ministries or give our students a hard time who are part of them. We think that's great. We just early on let them know, like, you need to be part of a church where you're being discipled, where you are plugged into a local body, where you are around people who are even older than you. And it took a little bit of time for us to become multi-generational, but we are fully multi-generational now. Like, you need to be a part of this in a place where you can serve. We need you to serve your local church. It really is part of our teaching early on. We incorporate into sermon series. We incorporate into small group curriculum, just helping these college students click and get it that the local church really is God's plan A. for discipleship, for the Great Commission, for the furthering of the kingdom, and they get to be a part of it.
So I preached for you, I guess, about a year or so ago, and I saw so many of these things up close and personal. Saw a lot of college students, but also certainly saw the church is multi-generational. Mm-hmm. There are older people there. There are all stages of life there. In the year 2017, what are the broad demographics of City Church? So 10 years later, roughly how many folks are worshiping there? Roughly what percentage of those will be college students? Help us understand kind of a current snapshot of the church.
Yeah, we had over 1,500 people last Sunday. And out of that, I would say that 500 were college students, which is a lot of college students going to a local church at one time, which is exciting. Sometimes there are weeks where, with a college schedule, we just it goes up and down. We had 5,000 people at Easter a couple years ago, so sort of up and down. But we're seeing a lot of people in terms of age demographic is my parents' generation, kind of in that 50 to 65 range, which has been really interesting to me. And come to find out, we've learned there's kind of two sorts of people when it comes to college students and younger millennials in church. When it comes to an older generation, there's the person who walks in and says, "Oh my word, look at all these young people," and they assume this is not for them and they leave. Or there's someone who comes in and says, "Wow, look at all these young people," and it excites them. They want to be a part of it. So one of the ways we have reached an older demographic is we've reached their adult children. And their adult children have come back to church after being de-churched, every word you want to use, for a long period of time. And we realized they weren't burned by church. They were bored by church. Some of the burned out by church is a little bit of an urban legend. Of course, there's some of that, but most were just bored by it. Hearing, crossless sermons and feeling like they stepped back in time 100 years on a Sunday morning in terms of just how it felt and those type of things. So when these families started seeing a lot of these families were de-churched as well, started seeing their adult children and bring their grandchildren to church, they started coming too, and now they're elders, they're serving, they're on greeting teams, they're on finance committees. I mean, they're fully involved in the life of the church.
That is so exciting. So let's try to pull this together a little bit, and we still have a few more minutes to talk, but I want to try to focus our remaining time on kind of what you've learned. In other words, man, you've been at this 10 years, banging away, God has blessed, you've been able to reach a lot of college students, have a vibrant college ministry, planted near Florida State University. What have you learned? And I don't mean this just as kind of a pragmatic checklist as to what works or doesn't work, but I do want words of wisdom. And maybe that'll sound pragmatic, but I want you to tell us what you've learned over the years about college ministry, about pastoring in a college town. What's been helpful? What's not been helpful?
Yeah, I've learned one, in a world of confusion, there's great value in hearing clarity. Where, these college students, millennials, everyone, they're hearing so many different things, so many different directions. So where our stances, our hard scriptural stances on many things will repel some people, for others it's a breath of fresh air. So we're seeing that to think that you have to water down anything to reach the next generation, it's just simply untrue. So that's been really encouraging to us. The second thing we've learned is in a world where seldom is a new regular when it comes to church attendance, like you've really got to figure out what discipleship looks like to somebody who's taking their kids to travel baseball 5 days a week. So we've learned we can't have a one-size-fits-all approach in 2017 to discipleship.
So I want to unpack this for a moment or ask you to elaborate a touch. The first point you made about that clarity of truth, being able to speak to issues of sexuality and gender and whatever the issue of the day is, bringing direct biblical truth claims to bear, I totally resonate with that. I see that. I sense that. I perceive that. I hear that when I talk to pastors. I mean, college students are wanting a certain word. They're wanting someone to bust through the fluff, someone to bust through the haze, the fog, and just to speak clearly about what the truth of God is. And again, that will repel some, of course, but to those who are being saved, it is the power of God and the salvation. To those who are whose heart is being convicted by the Spirit, I mean, that breathes life, hearing a clear word. Now, your second point about the scheduling reality, again, that's a very practical issue that many churches are facing with so many different issues competing for people's time, and we can lament that, and we do lament that. We wish our people were more committed week in and week out to the prioritization of the Lord's day. But at the same time, we have to have a dose of reality and kind of understand that we're playing the hand we've been dealt, and how we think about discipleship and community groups, and how we think of accountability structures in people's lives in light of that. So what are you learning?
Yeah, we need to minister to the world as it is, not as we want it to be. Now, we lead people to what we want it to be. We got to hit it as it is. So my wife, for example, reached out to about 10 to 12 ladies who she wanted to see make next steps in our church, from just attending twice a month to really at least being in some sort of Bible study. She reached out to them and said, "I'm going to be realistic." She asked them for every other week for an hour, and they agreed to it. Now, if you have a mindset that this one size fits all, Well, every week they should be in a group. It's like, well, that's not going to work for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So I'd rather have someone be discipled twice a month than not at all. So I just think if we really want to see people be discipled, we can't yell and kick and scream and moan at the new seldom is a new regular reality. I think I heard Tom Rainer first say that seldom is the new regular. We have to make sure that we are taking our message to that. I've heard people say, if you want to know how many people go to your church, like who call your church their home, look at how many people are there and then double it. I used to roll my eyes at that. That is totally true for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are probably 3,500 to 4,000 people who call our church their home, which in Tallahassee is a lot of people. But if we have a 2,000-person Sunday, that's nuts for us. You know, that's great because people come to church twice a month. We live close enough to the beach where you can go whenever you want, but far enough away where you stay the night. Yeah. So we're saying, okay, we want people to be disciple, and that means they're in a Bible study every 2 weeks, or that means they can do every Tuesday night. Fantastic. And we're going to try to be sure that instead of making it a huge issue, because that's not changing, it's only going to get worse. So the church has to figure out ways creatively to still be around, to be in people's minds and to be in front of them. So what we try to do is we try to get to your phone. So we're putting out a lot of content right now. We're putting out videos. We're putting out stories. We're putting out study guides for the sermon series we're doing. We're trying to get to your phone because that's where you're going to spend the most amount of your time. Stop at a red light today. Look to your left and to your right. Both people are going to be on their phones. That's where we're trying to get to. We think you need to be a part of your church. You need to be gathered. That's only going to be twice a month. We got to find ways to get to you the rest of the time.
So what else have you learned? That's helpful.
Yeah, I've learned some staffing things. You know, the importance of hiring people that love their church, especially in a church planting world where maybe in the early days you can't maybe compete, for lack of a better word, in terms of compensation with more established churches. Like, you need to hire people who love their church. I've brought in very few people from the outside. The majority of folks on our staff, if they weren't working for City Church, they probably would not be in vocational ministry. Now, they would be active members of the local church, love the Lord, they'd be really connected. But these are people that they didn't go to our church, or excuse me, they didn't work at our church, would still go to our church. There's something there in that to me. People that love their church, and one of the things I think that's allowed our staff to be so all in is their City Church members before their staff members.
So I'm curious about this as it relates to staffing. To what extent, if at all, have you thought age graded? By that I mean, do you have, you know, a guy who has a, you know, college minister badge on his chest? Or have you developed the mindset, look, guys, we are all ministers and we are all college ministers here? Which has it been, or either?
It's been both.
Okay.
So we do have the traditional role. We have a youth minister, we have a college minister, but we're all hands on deck together. So everything really does kind of cross, and in terms of people being fully involved in things. If you go to our Vacation Bible School, you'll see our music minister all the way to our children's pastor, college pastor, small groups pastor, all a part of it, all hands on deck. So we have specific roles in terms of those things, but it really is everybody participating together on what's going on, because it's a big picture kind of thing. We're truly unsiloed in terms of vision and how things operate, which is just really healthy.
So conversely, again, ministering in college town, 10 years ago, planted this church. Something you tried or you've learned that was just didn't work. Is there a spectacular failure out there? Something you did that you thought, my goodness, what was I thinking?
Yeah, I would say if we do X, it's going to get people to come. Every time we've done that, we've fallen on our face. So we had this grand idea that college students are up later. So let's start at 8 p.m. service on Sunday night. It just didn't work. In Tallahassee, it just didn't work because people who are already a part of our church were coming on Sunday morning who were college students. And I bring that up. So we had to pull it within 3 months because there was nobody there. It was actually kind of embarrassing. But when I get in that mindset, if we just do this thing, it's going to get people to come to church. That's not why people come to church. That could work great for transfer growth, where people are looking for the next best show in town, or, you know, who's going to have the best youth group for my kids, and they've been in 5 churches in 7 years. That can work great for them. But if we're really trying to reach lost people, unchurched people, they don't care about any of those kind of things that you do. They're only going to come up if a friend invites them. So anytime I have insisted or we got some kind of excited about an idea and the purpose was it's going to get people to come, it has never worked in terms of a service time, in terms of this initiative, because people are coming to church on the arm of a trusted friend. So that's where we made mistakes before, is just thinking that our cleverness could get someone to come. And then other things is moving too fast, you know, in terms of decision making. I move really quick. I'm aggressive. I have a bias towards action a lot of times when it comes to doing things. I've slowed down some because I've learned my lesson a lot of times. So I've had to apologize to a lot of people over the years in terms of changes we made too fast and not getting enough buy-in from people and those type of things. And then another important thing is, it took us time. I would not do this. This is my opinion. I wouldn't do this out of the gate. But once we established elders, that was really critical for us. lay elders is how we do it. So there's no conflict of interest. Mm-hmm. I'm the only in our bylaws per a staff member who is an elder is a senior pastor. We don't want that confusion of, well, am I the singles minister's boss or am I a co-elder? Like, how does that work? And I wouldn't rush elders. I tell people that when you know it's time for elders, I'm talking for church planters here. You know it's time for elders when you already have elders, mm-hmm. which is already viewed that way without the title. And that for me has been really huge because it allowed me to get things off my hands that I don't need to be dabbing in. Let them handle the finances. I'm in the loop. I know it's happening, but let them be over that. Yeah. Let them handle some of the hard conversations that I need some assistance with, moral failures we've had on our staffs, things like that. Let those kind of people do things. I'm just a real big believer that church planters need to have some sort of leadership laity structure around them to help them lead well.
One last question. What do the next 10 years look like by God's grace?
That's a great question, and that's probably what's keeping me up most at night right now, because in August is our 10-year anniversary, and we're going to make a big deal about it for our church and use it as a chance to celebrate, to thank God for what he's done, and also to cast some vision for the future. And we want to keep going. We believe to reach the capital city of Florida is really critical. Like, we think one of the most strategic states there is. To reach Florida's capital, we can reach the state, you can reach the country. It's the United States. We can reach the world, so why not Tallahassee? Is what we say. So I think you're going to see we're going to move towards a midweek college service as I get older. That's becoming more and more important. We just can't take for granted anymore that college students are going to come. Now, they're still going to be part of the life of our church, but we're going to have a specific focus for them during the week. Then we're going to have a conversation about what we've already planted some churches, what a long-term, like, kind of city church network, strategic church planting effort looks like. That includes some more campuses around Tallahassee. So that's probably what that's going to look like from our end. And then I really want to see city church staff members and city church members move, now that we've established in Tallahassee, move to go work IMB full-time and go plant churches in New Orleans, our sin city. So I think the next 10 years is really figuring out what that looks like, to really have a true, not just financial support of those kind of efforts, but really a sending culture where it's a win for us to have 3 staff members leave to go to New Orleans. It's a win for us to have staff member or church member, small group leader, deacon, elder, move to, a third world country to go be a missionary. Like, just really strategically figuring out how to create that culture in our church that takes sending beyond. We send really well in Tallahassee. Like, our folks are connected to lost people. They see their work as a mission field, their team as a mission field for our athletes. Like, we send to Tallahassee well. We're generous. We're trying to be generous as a church. So we've been faithful for a church plant only 10 years old with supporting mission efforts, like church planters and things like that. Now we want to be really sending people. So I think that's what church maturity is going to look like for us over the next 10 years, is to have a real outside of Tallahassee sending culture for us. And I want to help lead that.
Well, Dean, I love what you're doing. Of course, I'm from Mobile, Alabama, not too far down the road from Tallahassee, Florida. And I have a heart for the South, a heart for areas like that that have been so churched, but yet so very needy for the gospel. Mm-hmm. And to see what's taking place there is a real joy. I've been able to see it up close personally, preaching for you before, and proud of you as a graduate of Midwestern Seminary.
Thank you.
And just grateful for the partnership we have here. Well, man, we're going to pray for you, Dean. We appreciate your work there. Press on the faith, and I look forward to seeing and hearing great things from you in Tallahassee.
Thanks, Dr. Allen. Thanks for having me today.
You bet. Thank you for listening to Preaching and Preachers. For more information, please visit my website, jasonkallen.com.